Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on a Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
HOI Community Radio. This is the time of the year we often fall back on that tried and true Iowa saying, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. We have been blessed with the humidity just hanging in there and also falling down in great quantities from the air.
Yes, so you scrubbing the mildew out of your shower daily, practically. It's really, it's intense.
Well, so many parts of the world and so many parts of this country are watching their water dry up and not having things coming out of the tap. We are blessed with rain.
Absolutely.
Rain,
I would rather have too much wet than not enough.
Well, we certainly have it. So many things
as
are growing.
As long as one lives on a hill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Drainage. Everyone thinks of drainage this time of year. Ah. Today, we're going to be talking about berries and stone fruit and the weather, perhaps, and summer treats and flowers. We have a special guest coming up later. First, Donna's going to give us a little thought on a cool summer treat. You can enjoy this whether it's raining or not.
Well, you know, it's been hot, so we're all thirsty, and I've been exploring more beverages, and particularly the non-alcoholic kind. And I think last week we talked about the watermelon and kombucha combo, which has been very popular in my refrigerator. And the other one I'm going to try is I've got a huge rhubarb harvest still. So I'm going to make usually you make a rhubarb syrup. I'm going to try making it without any sugar. I was reading some adventurous chef who was just boiling the rhubarb down, you know, till it turns into mush. No sugar. They were putting, I think, a vanilla bean in it. And I read some other versions where they said, oh, at the end, put rose water in it. Lightly. I can see all of those, you know. But the whole idea was that to not sugar it, because then you can use it for different applications. You can always add sugar to it later. But it's kind of like using it the way you would lemon juice.
Okay, makes sense.
And even suggestions of freezing it into ice cubes and plopping that into even a plain seltzer water.
Now, that sounds good. I like
that. Yeah, a bubbly water or Prosecco, something, you know, a little bubbly wine, you know, not sweet. So I'm going to do that.
So when you boil this all down and make mush, is the liquid or the ice cubes, they end up being opaque, it's not translucent.
No, it is translucent. After you boil it down, then you, I mean, this is double duty. So you separate the liquid and you keep the pulp, which can then be, you know, made into sweetened, of course, probably rhubarb butter or topping for ice cream or, so you've still got the, you know, the stringy pulp stuff that we think of as rhubarb for one kind of application. And you've got the kind of the water. I'm going to boil liquid, it with more liquid than I would normally, so you're straining off part of the tart flavor. What was getting me on this kick is that I'm going to do an event for 80 people who are coming to Iowa, the National Sustainable Ag Coalition, and of course they want Iowa food, right? So it is lemonade time, but lemons are not from Iowa, so I'm going to try to just use make a rhubarb fruit summer drink thing.
Oh, that
and
sounds good.
A beverage mixer. We'll take a little bourbon along.
Good. Are you making then ice cubes or just using it as a sweet?
No, I'm just going to put it. I have a big, like, 5-gallon, you know, old-fashioned glass jar. So I'll probably make a lot of it. So they'll have it. It'll be kind of like a pink, not very, I'll probably add some sugar, but not very sweet lemonade-ish. Rhubarb-aid-ish. Yeah, and maybe I'll float some lemon verbena switches into it, because they always look pretty in the jar.
Oh, well, that's a good summer cool treat.
Yeah, I think tart is really good this time of year, or at least not terribly sweet.
Right. That sounds like a good thing to add to your summer list of things. And looking in the refrigerator and finding little bits of things left over. Cook down that rhubarb. That sounds like a fine thing.
I bet you could keep the concentrate in the refrigerator and just pour a little bit into a glass of water every time you were thirsty or something.
Oh, yes. I do that often.
Handy thing to have, yeah.
I do that often, and I'll try this with rhubarb. And yes, the rhubarb was very good this year.
Yes, big, big rhubarb harvest.
Well, I want to take time to remind people that this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, and lots of people are responsible for making this happen here. This is a community radio station. This is all volunteers, and we get by on your goodwill and your support. And here is a word from one of our supporters.
Yes, support for the Donna Lana Kitchen comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocer in Ames. Community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Ames Main Street. Everyone can shop at Wheatsfield Co-op.
A fine thing about summer is that things are growing. Like I said before, things are green. One of the pleasures of living in Iowa, living in any place where you can garden, where there is a piece of dirt, you can put in not only things to eat, but things that feed the soul, too. We're going to talk about flowers today.
Oh, boy, flowers. Well, with us, we have Beth Kemp.
Oh, I'm a farmer florist.
Right. And what's the name of your floral business?
Elizabella Flower Farms.
Elizabella, right. And you can always see Beth at the farmer's market, but she is quite a talented flower designer. I just love her. She's brought a bouquet in this morning for us, and it has elderberries in their kind of green beady stage for textural elements, asparagus ferns. Asparagus.
Fronds.
Yep. There we go. And these beautiful, slightly magenta and green coxcombs.
They sort of look like an underwater sea creature.
Yes, they do.
Yep. And then the first of my chrysanthemums.
Oh.
Yes. It's a little early, but everything's been early this year. And then I had a few lisianthus, and I put in some berries from my fall raspberries.
Unbloomed, they're bloomed, but they're in the early berry stage of raspberries. Yep. So they're it's all textural and it's lush. And what's this one up here?
Oh, this is more lisianthus.
Oh, just that hasn't
this
opened.
This is the buds. Aren't they beautiful?
Yeah.
They sort of look like a tall rosebud that's tightly wrapped.
Yeah, and will they open in the bouquet?
No. Only the ones that are colored. So there's a few that have a little blush of color. Mm-hmm. They may open. Yeah.
So, Beth, how do you pick which flowers? I love flowers.
I do, too. You mean which flowers to grow or how to put them into an arrangement?
Well, first, what do you grow out on your farm?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have about an acre and a half, so I don't have very much space, but you really can grow a ton
of
flowers.
That's a lot of flowers.
That's a lot of flowers. Mm-hmm. So I probably have a quarter of it in perennials, things like yarrow, perennial sunflowers, scabiosa.
What is a scabiosa?
Scabiosa, you've probably seen the pods. They sort of have they almost look like a dome, like with hexagon shaped. It's a dome with a hexagon texture. I'm sure if you saw them, you would know. They're small. When they bloom, they're a small, like, pincushion flower.
What color are they?
They're white or blue or sometimes purple.
Oh.
Sometimes pink, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They look sort of like little stiff clover heads.
Yes. That's a perfect way to describe it.
Oh, okay. Now I know what you mean.
We got to do this theater of the mind on the radio. Yeah, we have to really describe what everything looks like.
Yeah, we got
to
verbally visualize.
We'll work on the smell of flowers later, too. But right now, we're just... So what drew you to flowers? I know that for a while you were growing vegetables and doing other things. Why flowers? They seem very complicated.
They can be complicated. Well, some of my first memories are picking peonies out of my mother's garden. Mm-hmm. And they must have been planted when they moved there because she I don't think she would have put those particular peonies in that particular place. But I vividly remember picking them and putting them in my room and watching them bloom and then wilt. And so I've always been attracted to flowers. I mean, everybody's in some way attracted to flowers. And then when I got married 6 years ago, I decided, well, I'm just going to grow my own flowers. I've got this little tiny beginning of a vegetable farm. Surely I can put in some flowers. And they just were so happy. I just always wanted to be sort of in that part of the farm. You know, the beautiful zinnias and sunflowers. I was just very drawn to them. And then
that's true. Even mm-hmm. at your farmer's market stand, while you were selling vegetables, you also were selling flowers.
Right. Yes. So I've been selling flowers for at least 6 years. And I just noticed that they did well. People liked the way that I arranged flowers, and I slowly just did more and more. And then last year, I decided to take the plunge. I felt like there was plenty of vegetables at the farmer's market, and mm-hmm. I had lots of interest from people who wanted me to do weddings. And,
So you went from being the jumping bean farm
right.
to being
Elizabella Flower Farm.
Elizabella Flower Farm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, you added a bit of elegance.
I
That's
did.
Lovely.
I thought Jumping Bean Farm sounded a little bit like a daycare center. More than it was wonderful for my vegetables, but I wanted to do something that was more elegant, more someone you'd want to do your wedding.
So now you're doing events.
Yes, I do events. I have a floral CSA where you can pick up a bouquet and you pay at the beginning of the year. You can get a bouquet every week or every other week or just once a month, and that's through Farm to Folk. That's been great. And then I also do the farmer's market, so I'm keeping busy.
The downtown Ames
yes.
farmer.
Yes, and I sell wholesale flowers to other floral designers in town, and I sell to brides who want to DIY their own flowers.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I can just sell you whatever's beautiful and blooming on the farm.
Wow, and I heard you describing some peony tricks. Plus, you must have learned. Tell us some good tricks.
Oh, my goodness. Well, okay, the peony one is a good place to start. So peonies, I'm sure everyone knows what they are. They're the big bombs of pink and white that you see all around in kind of the mid-spring, kind of late mid-spring.
Early June into the middle of June. Yeah,
exactly. There's lots of them around town. And I love using those for all of my June weddings. So what I do is when the peony bud, the flower part, is getting plump and squishy like
a
marshmallow.
And still round.
And still round and closed. But you can see that it's colored up. It's called the marshmallow test. You give it a squeeze, and if it's like a firmish marshmallow, that's the perfect point to pick them to preserve them for the next month. So what I do is I cut them and I strip off all the leaves. That's important. And then I wrap them, I bundle them in bunches of 10 or 15, and I roll them in newspaper. So I give them a little newspaper cone, and then I slide that into a plastic bag, seal the plastic bag, and I put that flat in my fridge. So you don't need to have them in water. They just need to be cold, as cold as possible. Hmm. My florist fridge it hovers around 33 or 34, so it's very cold. Really cold, almost freezing. I mean, that's perfect for them. And then they can last for up to a month. And then when I need them, I pull out a bundle, I trim off an inch of the stem, I put them in warm water, and it takes them about a day overnight to bloom. And then you have a beautiful peony when no one else has peonies.
That is a wonderful
thing. Yes.
That's one thing about being a floral designer. You promise people beautiful things. How in the world can you ask the garden to, okay, garden, come on right now. I need them. Because generally, like you say, doing weddings, you're dealing in quite a quantity of things,
mm-hmm.
perhaps.
Yes.
So you've gotten used to knowing how, and I'm sure each flower is different.
Yes, there's a lot to learn. There's definitely a steep learning curve between vegetables and flowers. With vegetables, there's you know, if you know how to grow brassica, like a cabbage and a mustard, they all kind of grow about the same.
Mm-hmm.
But with flowers, there's so many different there's so many different plant families to get to know, and you need to know how to store them and how to keep them fresh. And getting back to your question about how do you about, you know, how do you do weddings and promise people beautiful things.
Plan ahead, yes.
Yeah, that is difficult. Mostly I do it by setting expectations quite low, you know. Yeah. I like to, when I talk
here,
to...
Here, you may get a couple of dandelion heads, right?
Well, it's always going to be beautiful, but I want brides to more give me the idea of what the style, what the feel that they would want. So, like, this bouquet that I brought you, you know, this I would call this, like, a romantic textural... bouquet, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would say. And it's she brought it in an old, very elaborate...
silver teapot.
Silver teapot. Yeah. Yes, just
well, I
adorable.
Thought it was appropriate for mm-hmm. the Donna Lana show.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Whoa.
Yeah. I thought about how you guys make me feel, and then I expressed it in flowers.
Oh, thank you. We're kind of romantic and droopy in a teapot.
That's textural. There's
floral,
sort of going
textural,
on.
Textural, you know.
So
old-fashioned.
Yeah, old-fashioned.
Country.
Definitely. Yeah. But elegant. It's elegant, I think.
It is. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
I love
so
it.
So I try to express what the feeling is that they want through the flowers. And you can do the same thing in your home. You know, if you're having a party and you want it to be fun and casual, you want to do bright zinnias and, you know, kind of just simple, loose. If you want it to be more elegant, I don't know, calla lilies, you know, in a tight bud vase.
I love flower arranging.
Yes.
Yes.
No, I know you do.
Well, when I had all of my celebrity clients, some of them, you know, keep flowers in their home so much that they actually have a person who comes mm-hmm. in twice a week, freshens everything up, changes the water, brings everything and arranges it. But also I had clients who didn't do that where they would say, Donna, bring some flowers for dinner. Aww. And I would just, I had a lot of fun. You know, I would mm-hmm. just go to like Whole Foods or wherever and grab a bunch of stuff and that was as fun as cooking. And a whole lot
definitely.
Faster.
Right? Yes. No, it is very similar to cooking because mm-hmm. it's one of those things that doesn't last forever. Mm-hmm. So you can't be too precious. You know, it's not like a painting where every stroke counts. Everything can be moved around and it's, you know, it's temporary, which kind of makes it more beautiful in a way.
Fleeting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Precious, yes.
Yeah. You're never going to have this arrangement uh-huh. ever again. This is it, you know?
Do you have some tips for if you do buy some flowers at a market or even mm-hmm. go out and pick your own. What should you do when you have this handful of flowers and your mason jar? And you are the things mm-hmm. you should put in the water or not?
Well, I do use floral preserver, but I think the most important thing is to change the water, if not daily, every other day. Mm-hmm. And also mm-hmm. when you change the water, at least once you'll want to trim the stems. Because the flowers, that's the only way that they can drink, is through the cut end of their stems.
Mm-hmm. So these are actually very good tips for mm-hmm. making it last longer.
Yes. Yes.
So when you buy a bouquet mm-hmm. or buy a selection, you should, it's 2 hours since you've gotten home. Should you cut it off again?
Yes. Okay. What I do,
before
what
you put
I recommend, yeah. What I recommend is before you put it in the vase, you take off the rubber band or the twist tie or however they're bundled. You mm-hmm. want to, because you don't want to restrict, you know, kind of choke them. Mm-hmm. That's a little mm-hmm. bit of a choke hold on the stems. Remove that. Select the right vase. You'll want your flowers to be between like a third to two-thirds taller than the vase is. So if you think in threes, you know, one-third should be the vase and two-thirds mm-hmm. to half should mm-hmm. be the flower. So you can kind of see on this arrangement that I'm pointing at on our table, that's how, more or less, how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good rule of thumb. Choose the right vase, and then you'll want to trim half an inch off the stems, and then you can just slip it into clean, fresh water.
Okay. Now, I also pull all the leaves off that would be
yes.
in the water. Because that's less to rot, basically.
Exactly. I forgot that. Yes, you want to make sure that you just have bare stems mm-hmm. in the water. And that the water should be a little deeper maybe than you think. Because they will drink up a lot of water, especially at first.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what about woody stems? I've heard you're supposed to pound them.
Yeah. Or split them. You know,
so that they have more surface yeah. areas to take water in. Like lilacs, for example.
Oh, right. Lilac. Or if you put a branch of an apple tree or cherry bloom in or something. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You can just give it a little smash with the base of a knife or with a
just take a hammer.
Mallet. Yeah.
Oh, my. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. That's
like
good.
In the spring, you know, one of the first things I did that oh, it was we didn't get flowers for forever, and it was early April, and I had that Dan Barber thing.
Oh, you had the magnolia branches.
Yeah,
I remember. That was very elegant.
Oh, magnolia. Oh, sure.
I went flower stealing on ISU campus. Well, they had the best magnolias. Mm-hmm. So I just go out with a little saw.
It's called foraging.
Foraging.
You
yes.
went foraging.
Yes, I was foraging. So I just go out with a little saw, a little pruning saw, and came back with a lot of magnolias.
It was so tall and
oh, yeah, they were
regal.
Gorgeous.
It
yeah.
was very regal, and it fit your space really well.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Oh, now that's another thing when considering floral arrangements is, for example, I try to keep one always on my kitchen table, which is backed against a wall.
Uh-huh.
So you have to, when you're doing that, it doesn't have to be beautiful all the way around, just
right.
on the sides that are showing and kind of bank it up taller. Or if it's going to be where you're looking at all sides, then you mm-hmm. have to consider it all the way around.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to think about where it's going mm-hmm. and what the shape of your vases.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
exactly. Well, like the arrangement that I brought you all has almost nothing but green on the backside.
Mm-hmm.
So it's meant to be put up against a wall or to be facing... You know, facing one direction.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And now there are dinner table rules, too.
Oh, well, tell me about this. I don't know if I know the dinner table rules.
Well, the dinner table rules are that flowers on a dinner table must not impede guests being able to see each other
yes.
across the table. So you never put a big, tall arrangement in the middle of a dinner table. You can do either lots of low mm-hmm. things, you know, kind of strung along the length of the table, or even a center, but they should never probably be more than, what, 8 inches mm-hmm. tall or something
yep.
like that, because you can't obstruct the communications across the table.
Or passing the potatoes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to be able to pass the salt and butter across the flowers.
Oh, that's
yeah, that's
good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm. We'll take a little music break here. This is a music called Of the Roses White, the Roses Red, sung by June Tabor.
The rose is white, the rose is red, the rose is in my garden. I would not part with my sweetheart, put up and save any farden. God save us, our noble queen. Kitty the spinner sat down to dinner and ate the leg of a frog. All you good people look over the steeple and see the cat play with the dog. It's blue, honey sweet, and so are you. Thou art my love, and I am thine. I drew thee to my valentine. Lots were cast, and then I drew. Fortune said it must be you. Sweetheart, put up and say funny pardon.
We're We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You are listening to KHOI 89.1 FM, Radio for the Heart of Iowa. And one of the fine things that touches our heart is flowers. We're talking about blooming things with Beth Kemp.
And we have had a good blooming season. I was thinking we've almost finished the progression of lilies. I think Ames has amazing, at least in our neighborhood downtown, an amazing amount of all kinds of lilies around.
There's such a hardy plant for this particular climate. They'll get huge, and all you need to do really is throw a bulb in. I think you plant lilies in the fall, I believe. I should know this.
Yes, Lana? Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thanks. Lana's giving me the yes
Shake
nod.
Shake head yes.
Yes. Yeah. And then they'll persist forever. They're great.
Well, there's the bulbs, but then there's, don't they also, I guess everything is for a lily is considered a bulb, or is it a corm?
I think it is a corm. You're
a
right.
A corm, mm-hmm. Kind of a,
well, how
a
did I
lumpy
get them,
thing.
How did I get them spread someplace that I didn't plant them?
That's how they go. They like to spread. How far did they go?
Well, like I have some inside my fence, and all of a sudden they're out in that front part by
the
street.
Are you talking about tiger lilies with the black dots on the stems? Or are these
Asiatic? Oh, I don't know.
Asiatic?
They're orange.
It's probably tiger lilies. Tiger lilies, they're blooming right now. Yep. Uh-huh, and they sort of have a droopy, downward-facing flower.
And how do
flower.
They spread?
Well, they form their seeds on the stem. If you look at yours when you get home, they have like a black, they probably have black dots, shiny black, almost look like eggs or seeds. They are mm-hmm. seeds. And if they fall over or when you're cleaning up in the fall, they spread that way. They're good spreaders.
This
vigorous.
Just started, so I stopped mowing mm-hmm. in that patch, and now I have a lovely little entrance there.
Yeah,
there
but they do tend to spread diseases to other types of lilies, Oriental and Asiatic lilies, which are those, the pink, whites, you know, all the different shades, oranges. They come in all shades, mm-hmm. and they usually bloom first. But the tiger lilies, these orange ones, actually can spread disease to your other cultivated lilies.
Well, I'll keep them outside
yes,
the
keep
fence.
Them, keep them.
Now, do you have any tricks for picking lilies and putting them into bouquets?
Pick lilies before they're fully bloomed. So mm-hmm. you'll see the bud kind of swells and gets mm-hmm. colored. So you'll be able to see what color they will be. And then if you cut them and you can put them in water, and it'll last for almost 2 weeks, and they'll continue to bloom up the stem. Up on, almost to the tip top.
And are you taking off the ones as they fall and then they
yes.
keep going
mm-hmm.
up?
The other thing is you'll want to pull off the stamen, the pollen forming, you know, the little dangly things that drop on
yes.
your tablecloth and stain
make
your
everything
tablecloth.
Orange. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, if you, here's a trick for getting rid of that orange
on
stain.
The tablecloth
yes.
from the pollen. Yes,
the trick
that's
is,
a big deal.
The trick is to not use water, to use Scotch tape, to try to remove as much pollen as you possibly can from the table before you get it wet, if you can. And then if you lay your tablecloth in the sun for a few hours, the stain will disappear.
Oh, that...
Really?
Yes.
Because that stuff can be nasty. It's
very
red.
You'll
it's
never
red.
Get rid of it.
Oh, it looks... Thank you.
So,
you have
water,
helped,
then.
No water.
You have helped Central Iowa deal with its lily stamen pollen, a scourge that we all have to lie awake
true.
Nights
I've
worrying about.
Things
it's true.
With that, yeah.
It happens very seldom in my house, but I did, yeah. What is this stuff that stains? Okay, that's it. You were talking before about some non-traditional sort of things you might put into a bouquet. What about curly willow? You were waxing eloquent about curly willow.
It's a wonderful element to put into bouquets because it's very texture. I love texture. Mm. It's very textural, and it gives you that sort of a clean line that makes your eye kind of follow up and out of the bouquet. Mm-hmm. It kind of gives it a good flow and texture to a bouquet. So curly willow is a tree, and it has...
It's a willow tree.
It's a willow tree, and it has rather thin branches that do kind of curl, almost like someone with curly hair.
Yeah,
corkscrew.
Yeah.
And I use them many different ways. You can put them in an arrangement, like I was saying, to give it height and texture. You can also strip off all the leaves and curl them up and put them into like a round vase.
Clear glass. Yep. Yeah.
And then you, as you arrange into the vase, your stems will stay right where you put them. Because sometimes that's difficult when you're beginning to arrange. Things tip over. They just slide from where you want them to be.
Ungainly occasionally.
Yeah, and it's very disheartening if you're not quite sure what you're doing. So, So if you put something in the vase to kind of hold everything, curly willow is a good element to that. I also, if I have a vase that is not clear, I sometimes will just put a little ball of chicken wire into the vase for the same reason.
I have things that from my mother and grandmother yet. They're little glass
frogs.
They call them frogs.
Yeah.
Little sculptural things you put down there with many, many holes. Mm-hmm. And you can use those over and over again. Do they still use florist green stuff?
Yes, but they've found that actually causes cancer, the dust.
I thought so. It's nasty stuff.
It's not good. And it doesn't decompose well.
No. So they don't use that anymore?
No, they do. They do use it, but I prefer not to use it.
There's other things you can wad up down there.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right, and they're reusable, and those frogs work great. Right.
And what about the old metal spiky ones? Do you use those?
I don't use those, but I don't see why you couldn't.
No, yeah. I have a small collection of them. Some of them are rather interesting looking.
Yeah. The frogs are the same way. Some of them are quite lovely and almost like a glass biscuit with holes in it.
That's a good description. Mm-hmm. A good description.
Oh, that's another thing. What about using marbles?
Oh, yeah, sure. Or river rocks or anything that would just hold. That works really well in mason jars to use marbles or rocks.
Very good.
Oh, that would be really pretty. Yeah.
Mason jars are rather difficult to arrange in. They seem simple.
No, that's right. They're a rather small,
yes,
small
opening
space.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yeah, that's true. So think vertical
right,
for a mason jar. Okay, you mentioned curly willow. Donna turned me on to a project that has to do with a beautiful fruit tree. It supposedly has 40 fruits grafted on one tree.
This is I just found this on Mother Nature Network this week, and it was such an exceptional thing. I sent it around to a few friends. It's an artist named Sam Van Aken, and it says he developed a tree that bears a variety of different fruits. So it's all grafting, and his pièce de résistance is a tree that bears 40 kinds of fruit.
So explain what grafting is, if people don't know.
Oh, Lana, this is your department.
I've actually done this very badly, but I have done this. It's actually taking a bud from a fruit tree or something else in the spring, and you have to look for a similar variety, like an apple variety or apples and plums, and they're all kind of in the same family. It is taking a bud or a scion, a small piece of the branch, and making a slit in the host plant, inserting the new different variety, and then...
But they have to be related.
They have to be related.
This project is all some kind of stone fruit or almonds or something like that.
Yes, it has to be related, yes.
So it's like you're amputating one tree and putting a new arm onto another?
It's like a transplant.
Oh, okay.
And you can do it little bits at a time. People can get really good at it. I just remember getting all full of nicks on my fingers and full of grafting wax at the time. It was a mess because grafting wax is something that you seal the incision with.
He showed some tape that he wrapped around it and stuff like that.
Other people have different ways to do it, but that's kind of it. You take a part of one, add it to a base stock of another, but someone that did it with 40 different varieties.
I'm going to just read a little of this article. He says, Sam Van Aken once envisioned a tree with blooms of pink, purple, fuchsia, and red that would bear 40 different kinds of fruit. Today, that tree is a reality. He says, I'm an artist, so the whole project began really with the idea of creating a tree that would blossom in these different colors and would bear these multitude of fruits. He's a professor at Syracuse University College of Visual and Performing Arts, and he spent 9 years to get this tree, you know, to reach its full perfection. And so he's not only arranging what he's doing, it's kind of like making a floral arrangement that takes you 9 years. Whew. So he's grafting by the color to, you know, make an arrangement and a palette. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to stick an apricot here. And this little article, which if you want to see the pictures, go to Mother Nature Network. It's a July 28th issue. And they show pictures of him, and there's even a little video where he talks about the project. He's now created 14 of these trees, and he says he likes to put them in public places where people will kind of stumble along and go, oh, realize that this tree has different shaped leaves mm-hmm. all over it. And then he said, and by the time the fruit comes, you know, you're looking at it, like there's a picture here, you can see it's got some plums and some apricots hanging right next to each other. What a wonderful, magical thing. I think
plants are magical, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we got to start some of these going on. I mean, I've seen an apple trees in Iowa where they have grafted two different flavors mm-hmm. or varieties. Mm-hmm. But this is like just over the moon.
Oh, again, turning something into an art form because it is beautiful.
It is an art form. Flower arranging is an art mm-hmm. form.
Oh, yes. Oh, so he get all his stuff on the tree. You also had some tips for how to store stone fruit.
Oh, yes.
Because that's the fruit with the pits on the inside, plums
we're
and
coming
the
into,
peaches. And,
you know, good peach season and things like that. And
Number one, you have to pick a good one to start with. But say that you do have good stone fruit. How do you keep it?
Well, especially with peaches, you know, I'm horrible when I'm in the grocery store. I often make the produce person come over and slice me one open because, you know, I don't want to buy 5 pound of peaches and get home and find out that they're either mealy or don't have a nice tang to them or something like that, you know. So right now we've probably still got some South Carolina peaches. We've certainly got California peaches coming in. And we are getting the Missouri peaches. It's early, so you know, they're in the stores now. They're still a bit pricey, but they're starting to come down. And, of course, they're hard as rocks. Right? Mm-hmm. So peaches are one of the things that will ripen once you get it. So you got to take it home and just leave it on the counter and keep pinching it and smelling it. And I do trust my nose when I'm shopping, particularly with melons, which are not stone fruits, but also peaches and apricots. If they have no odor at all, I'm going, I don't think so. So storing the stone fruits, for example, apricots have an extremely high metabolism and they deteriorate very quickly. So you have to kind of eat those right away. Storing berries, which we're still doing, is a completely different thing. Refrigeration, of course, retards ripening, but it can be really destructive. So, of course, blueberries are the easiest things to store. What are they called? They're called climacteric. Some fruits are because they produce their own ethylene, and then they're stimulated to make even more, so they'll ripen even faster. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you can wash blueberries fairly easily because they're thick skin. Strawberries, boy, oh, boy. The easiest way is to take a bowl of clear water, just gently put a handful in at a time and very lightly swish them around. Take them out immediately and place them single layer on a cloth that will absorb the extra water.
You don't want to store berries wet.
No, and you don't want to do that until you're absolutely ready to eat
right.
them. Even like raspberries and blackberries with all those little nooks and crannies in them, if you can avoid washing them at all. I try not to.
Well, after all, they are up in the air. They're not in the dirt. So yeah.
No. You can, you know, pick through them to make sure there's no little beasties on them or anything like that. But the water is quite destructive for those. And I try not to store them in the freezer, to just get them right when you're going to eat the berries. But, you know, when you buy them in the package at the store, pick them up and look at the papers that they put in the bottom. If the papers are soggy or if you see any little bit of mold, don't buy them. And if you have to store them as you bought them, particularly with strawberries. If I have to put them in the fridge, I'll just take a wash rag and put water on it, squeeze it out, and lay it over or some kind of towel so that they don't.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Don't dry out. But, you know, there's a limit to how long you can push these things. If you really can't eat them right away, freezer.
There you go.
Freezer.
There you go. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've been talking about summer. Here we are in the middle of it. Another familiar part of summer in Iowa is the sound of lawnmowers. We love our lawns. I think the history of lawns is that before lawnmowers, the only people that had lawns that looked like lawns were the people that were rich enough to have sheep, goats, cattle. They could have their manor house. They could have shepherds out there.
So controlled grazing.
Controlled grazing. And so it looked like, oh, they must be rich. They have their farm in order. Everything's tidy. The poorer folk didn't have something to graze. Their hovels or their houses, their lawns were a little less tidy. So it became a bit of status to have lawns. And so even when there weren't reasons for putting your sheep out in your in the front of your chateau, you did it anyway, so it looked lovely when people came up. Oh, yes, yes. We love our lawns. Here's a little bit of a radio drama featuring a different perspective from the celestial point of view. Cookie Crumb Theater presents Thoughts on Lawn Care, a dialogue between God and St. Francis.
Francis, you all know about gardens and nature. What in the world is going on down there? What happened to the dandelions, violets, thistle, and stuff I started eons ago? I had a perfect no-maintenance garden plan. Those plants grow in any type of soil, whisk down drought, and multiply with abandon. The nectar from the long-lasting blossoms attracts butterflies, honeybees, flocks of songbirds. I expected to see a vast garden of colors by now. All I see are those green rectangles.
It's the tribes that settled there, Lord. Suburbanites. They started calling your flowers weeds and went to great lengths to kill them and replace them with grass.
Grass? Grass? That's so boring. It's not colorful. It doesn't attract butterflies, birds, and bees, only grubs and sod worms. It's temperamental with temperatures. Do these suburbanites really want all that grass growing there?
Apparently so, Lord. They go to great pains to grow it and keep it green. They begin each spring by fertilizing grass and poisoning any other plants that crop up in the lawn.
The spring rains and warm weather probably make that grass grow really fast. That must make the suburbanites happy.
Apparently not, Lord. As soon as it grows a little, they cut it, sometimes twice a week.
They cut it? Do they bale it, like hay?
Not exactly, Lord. Most of them rake it up and put it in bags.
Ah, they bag it. Cash crop, do they sell it?
No, sir. Just the opposite. They pay to throw it away.
Now, let me get this straight. They fertilize grass, so it will grow. And then when it does grow, they cut it off and pay to throw it away.
Yes, sir.
These suburbanites must be relieved in the summer when we cut back on all the rain and turn up the heat. That surely slows the growth and saves them a lot of work.
Well, you aren't going to believe this, Lord. When the grass stops growing so fast, they drag out hoses and pay more money to water it. So they continue to mow it and continue to pay to get rid of it.
That's nonsense. At least they kept some of the trees. Oh, what a sheer stroke of genius, if I do say so myself. The trees grow leaves in the spring that provide beauty and shade in the summer. In the autumn, they fall to the ground and form a natural blanket to keep moisture into the soil, and they protect the trees and bushes. Plus, as they rot, the leaves form compost to enhance the soil. It's the natural cycle of life.
You better sit down, Lord. The suburbanites have drawn a new circle. As soon as the leaves fall, they rake them into great piles, and again, they pay to have them hauled away.
No. What do they do to protect shrub and tree roots in the winter and keep the soil moist? I'm confused.
Oh, after throwing the leaves away, they go out and buy something which they call mulch. They haul it home and spread it around in place of the leaves.
I'm going to regret asking this. Where do they get this mulch?
They cut down the trees, grind them up to make the mulch.
Enough. I don't want to think about this anymore. St. Catherine is in charge of the arts. What movie does she have scheduled for us tonight?
Oh, let's see. It's Dumb and Dumber, Lord. It's a really stupid movie.
Never mind. I think I just heard the whole story.
You've been listening to a presentation by Cookie Crumb Theater, a small production of Donna Lana Kitchen. You heard Lana Noctigal as St. Francis and Doc Anderson as the voice of God. We're back. Yes. Lots of good stuff can grow if we just let it. Let's talk about things with Beth Kemp here, and let's talk about edible flowers. We could eat some of these things, too.
Isn't that the best? Beauty and delicious?
Yes.
I think it's a good combination. Probably my favorite edible flower are nasturtiums. Actually, I think, Donna, you turned me on to nasturtium flowers.
Oh, love the nasturtiums. And we've got them right now. Are you putting some in your salads?
Oh, yes. It's a good hot summer thing when all the lettuce is kind of gone the way of all flesh, as it tends to do. Mm-hmm. There's still not only the nasturtium flowers, but there are the nasturtium leaves.
The leaves. They're spicy. They're delicious.
And they fit into a sandwich just fine.
And they're really pretty shapes, too,
yes,
the nasturtium leaves.
Lovely shapes. I use them in flower arranging. They sort of have a mind of their own. You put them in an arrangement, and in the morning, they've shifted. They've kind of gone up to the light, and it's quite nice. It's like an interaction, a collaboration between me and the nasturtiums.
A kinetic sculpture.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Oh, some other things you can eat are the leaves off of the flowers off of radishes, mustards. Calendula is a flower you can eat.
And you can also, with like calendula, you can pull the petals out and kind of sprinkle them over salads or dishes, or gives you an extra little color note.
Roses, you can eat the petals.
If you make sure that
don't just buy roses from a commercial florist, because heaven knows where those roses have been.
Well, and but what's if, been yeah,
sprayed,
sprayed
on them.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
And violets and pansies. Yes.
And borage flowers.
Oh, there you go.
They're beautiful. They're tiny little things, but I like to garnish ice cream with them or something like that. Just a single little purple flower with that dark center.
Doesn't take much to impress people. You take a bowl of hummus with a few nasturtium flowers to a potluck, and everyone is going to come up to you and think that you're just the bee's knees.
Oh, Consider your bowl of hummus, which is very good for you, but has sort of a plain Jane sort of face. Mm-hmm. So, oh, good idea. Putting
well, I've even
on
done
those.
Things like one time I a very high-end Hollywood, I don't know, 80 or 100 people or something in a private home. And I took, I made a sweet potato, a cream of sweet potato soup in a big white bowl. And then I just put a nasturtium leaf and flour right on the rim.
Oh.
Knocked their socks off.
Oh, sounds beautiful. The orange and the bright
green. Yeah, it was beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Isn't it nice how we respond to greenery and to flowers? It's wonderful. Beth, you were talking about kind of trends that happen. And you mentioned that weddings nowadays, sometimes people ask for things like herbs in their in their bouquets.
Lavender, especially, it seems to be a very trendy flower right now. I'm not quite sure why. It's just sort of the moment for herbs, I think, in bouquets.
Lavender is trending in all kinds of flavors right now, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Who decides these things?
Well, remember our lavender mustard? I don't know.
Right.
You know,
that sounds delicious.
It is good. Yeah. And of course, there are lavender desserts, cookies. Mm-hmm. You can put it in ice creams. It has that sort of edgy, it's floral, but it also almost veers in, well, it is medicinal.
Yeah.
Has medicinal uses. And so it's an old-fashioned flavor, too.
Yes. Yeah, lots of mints. I'm arranging with tons of mint right now.
Oh, and there's so many different kinds. Yep. What are you growing?
So I'm growing apple mint, which is sort of a light green. It's got a big leaf, and it's kind of fuzzy. It looks kind of cuddly. You just want to rub it all over your face.
It has a really delicate scent, too.
Yes. Yeah, it does sort of have an apple-y, minty scent. Yeah, it's. I don't find it particularly delicious. I mean,
no, I don't like it particularly for cooking, but it is lovely for smelling.
And chocolate mint is sort of a darker color.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, scented geraniums.
That's what I was going to ask you,
Donna. It is your flavor.
Oh, love it, love
it. Yes. So geraniums have a beautiful sort of big, wide, circular leaf that's sometimes got like a, not sawtooth, what am I trying to
serrated.
Say? Serrated. Yeah, a serrated leaf. Really lovely. And they come in all different scents. Lime, lemon. I think there's an apple geranium.
There is.
And there's a chocolate geranium as well that has a dark vein. Those are beautiful.
Are you growing all of those?
I'm not. They are a little difficult to grow here, and I never really got them started this spring. But I have plans. I have plans.
Well, Lana grows the scented rose geranium that I love. It's called a skeleton rose geranium. Mm-hmm. And we take them in every winter
Now, that's one that I would think as a cut flower, it wasn't so good because the flower is teeny tiny. Mm-hmm. The leaf is what you celebrate.
The leaf is beautiful.
You celebrate the leaf. Yeah.
And I cook with it a lot.
Yeah. And I think of geraniums as something that would not be good in a bouquet because it seems like the petals fall off. And I find that with maybe gathering things in the woods, too, like the phlox and the wild phlox. By the time you get them to the kitchen, they just are not really good for the vase. Yeah, They've all fallen apart.
In the florist trade, we call that shattering.
Ah, very good.
Yeah, that's the term for flowers where they don't hold their petals well.
Mm-hmm. And that's just how they are. And you're just going to have to pick another one, right?
So do you take your rose geraniums in every winter?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're worth it. I take in. Oh, the only ones I bother with are rose geranium and lemon verbena. Mm-hmm. Those two I take in every winter.
Well, there's just something wonderful about having visual and a smell. It's kind of engaging all your senses.
You might. Mm-hmm. Have you been using lemon verbena?
No, I have not.
Oh, all right. You got to come visit mine. That would be a knock your socks off. It drags like a curly willow sort of. But the odor it's like you just want to brush up against it in the garden all the time. It's just beautiful. What about wildflowers?
Foraging. I do love to forage. Right now is a great time.
Lots of Queen Anne's lace right now.
Oh, there's so much stuff out there. Three cheers to all of you who enjoy flowers and plant flowers. We've been talking to Beth Kemp here on the Donna Lana Kitchen. Donna Lana Kitchen airs every week here on KHOI Community Radio. Go to khoifm.org, support, and contact us at khoiradio@gmail.com. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had fine engineering by Virad Duat. Eat good food and enjoy life.